record, this is the October 9th, 2013 Treasure Island Development Authority. To making your comments, please state your name and the organization you're representing for the record. I do have speaker cards. First is Catherine Lundgren, the TI Health Network.
Hi, thanks for having us and giving us a chance to speak again. I'm Catherine Lundgren with the Treasure Island Health Network. Normally I come up here and throw a bunch of challenges at everyone, things that we want to have changed, but I'm actually here today to say thank you. There's been a lot of support from the board as far as some of the activities that we've created, but I've also seen the SFSA TIDA supported leadership training that was offered to the island residents, and that was some more cooperation among the residents and the community, and I know that will extend to the board. I'd also like to just quickly announce that we have a new youth board that's fully active and engaged and ready to improve the things that we can on the island. And we have two new officers with me, so we're excited, and mostly it's just a thank you. Thank you for being organized and for your support.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your leadership. Pretty active group.
just wanted to say one more thing. This is for myself, but I understand that yesterday the Board of Supervisors passed an ordinance appropriating up to $15.5 million for certificate of participation proceeds to finance the improvement of the Treasure Island infrastructure. That along with the funding on the ramps is exciting news, and we're forward to moving forward, and that some big changes are coming up. Finally, I see residents here who are going to be addressing concerns about the tennis courts and the contact with Revolution. I'd like to share concerns about that.
Thank you again, sir, for your leadership.
Thank you.
And the card is for Pina Correa.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Pina Correa. I live on the island for 14 years and I'm Mr. Driver of the San Francisco Sacred Church Charter and Island by Island, which has voted to take the community. I'm here to ask you to terminate the tennis court contract to enter into the Revolution Sports Center. Revolution has shown itself to be non-responsive, non-performing partner to the community, and it has violated the contract. First, Revolution agreed to restore the courts to playable conditions, although they put into two tennis nets with posts where no back fences were put. This literally makes the courts unusable. All San Francisco tennis courts, indeed all courts everywhere in the world, have fences on the edge and double tennis courts to stop balls falling away and keep them under court. Two, Revolution agreed to improve, maintain, and repair the fence. Apart from two nets, no improvements or repairs have been made. The missing fences or the entrance gates or the ground court surfaces on the nets, the other six remaining courts. Three, Revolution agreed to make facilities, training, and athletic events available to the community. We're now in October. No events, no training sessions, no tennis lessons, no fitness lessons, or any activity of any kind of reason provided by Revolution. Four, Revolution agreed events would include lessons with the ideas and habits as well as strength and agility training at no cost to the community. No lessons have been provided by Revolution. Perhaps that explains the willingness to offer services. After all, it doesn't cost them anything to provide for nothing. Five, Revolution agreed to keep one court available for residents use because the courts are unplayable and cannot be used. In addition to this, has refused to answer email inquiries from island residents and declined the invitation from San Francisco Leadership Group to attend the Thursday, September 19th meeting to discuss the state of affairs. I encourage you to terminate this contract. It is a sham and provides no deadlines to which Revolution can be held accountable for non-compliance. Please work with our group to remedy the situation. We have repeatedly asked both Miriam Sainz and Richard Rovetti to work with us on this issue. Their replies have been ineffective, sporadic, and disingenuous. Ms. Sainz is not responsive. We offer again to work with you in a positive, honest manner on this issue. We would love to participate more actively in the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presence.
Next card. I apologize if I mispronounced. Is it Seven Raybell? Seven?
My name is Savin Roybal, and I'm also a resident of Treasure Island. I was also part of the San Francisco Leadership Group, where we try to basically achieve usable tennis courts on the island. Currently, we have two, you've probably heard about this before, but we currently have two tennis courts on Treasure Island. One of them is technically playable, it has fences around it and a net, but it's in such disrepair that the actual net is being held up by a stick in the middle. The residents placed there, so you can use it. We were actually really hopeful with the Revolution Sports proposal or contract so that we would, you know, have really usable courts. But as many said before me, currently those are only somewhat playable. There are now technically tennis courts that we can use. Unfortunately, there's not sufficient perimeter fencing. And we would hope at least, even if not the Revolution Sports, eventually we can receive funding so we can make these courts really playable. Because Treasure Island has so much green space and so much opportunity. But unfortunately, due to various infrastructure conditions, a lot of it's not really usable. And we have so many kids, and having recently lost access to On Island Boys and Girls Club, A lot of the children on the island really don't have much to do once they finally do get home. That's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much again for your leadership.
I have no more speaker, please.
Thank you. And, you know, for the residents, I know that during public comments, we just want you to bear with us because this island, you know, ultimately will be developed. And right now, we don't need to clean up process. The city, when it is fully developed, it is going to be one of the most wonderful places in the Bay Area because in the plan, you have plenty of open space. In fact, majority of the land is not going to be developed. It will be allocated for open space. So bear with us right now as we're trying to kind of juggle around because everybody's still trying to get things together until all the infrastructure is in place. There are going to be, at least, we should expect, you know, some restrictions. Thank you very much. Next thing on the agenda.
Item number 3A, report by Director of Island Operations.
Good afternoon. Marian Saez, to report on operational issues of the island in the past month. As reported by the Southern Station, there are indeed two residential burglaries last month. The monthly crime stats report is found in tab 3, and the Southern Station newsletter is found in tab 4. Statistically, residential crime is down, and thanks to the cooperation between the housing providers, the SF Police Department, and Titus staff, efforts to inform residents of crimes of opportunity have made the difference. Through newsletters and residential advisories, we continue to get the message out to residents to lock up. At the Southern Station Captain's Meeting on September 18th, held on Treasure Island, Captain Edmund and staff were on hand to emphasize this point, as well as provide a wider overview and understanding of District 6 police issues as a whole. With regards to power outages, in the month of September, we experienced one power outage. The cause was identified as a kite flown into an aerial line. The staff will work with PUC and the risk manager to explore the need to post warning signs to inform the general public of this potential hazard. DPW Bureau of Urban Forestry, or BUF, completed its final phase of TIDA's event district beautification project. The scope of work included the installation of flowers and shrubs along the pavilion by the bay, and the placement of large boulders and DG, that is the granite, to extend the walkway along the Avenue of the Palm for pedestrian safety. I've provided a photo of that installation. Under our vegetation management plan, DPW continues with tree pruning and removal of hazardous trees throughout the island. The brush fire on YBI on Sunday acts as a reminder of how important this plan is to safety and protection. Over the past couple of weeks, Goats R Us cleared vegetation on YBI. The fire itself was on the southwest side of the island, which is owned by or leased to the Coast Guard. I was on site and personally witnessed the fire department's response and quick control of the situation. The Department of Emergency Management, as well as the SFPD, stood ready in the event it was necessary to notify residents for any kind of safe health issue. There was no issue with water pressure or access to the fire hydrants. A fire watch continued for several days. Staff in the fire department have met with the Coast Guard to discuss their vegetation management plan, and the cause of the fire is still under investigation, but sources say that it was indeed fireworks that may have played a role there. Under financial reports for our fiscal year end June, were distributed in your package. GSA has closed the books. Our projected revenue are at budget, and having balanced our losses in housing revenue with commercial income over some $700,000. Expenses and development costs were below budget, as few YBI households actually took the payment in lieu payment that was allocated to them for relocation benefits. Further, we had city work orders savings in salaries and in attorney fees. I have the following quality of life issues to report. Wi-Fi. The final two steps to complete the long-awaited connection are underway, according to the Department of Technology staff. Step one is the installation of a new equipment at the Fire Station 48, which will then transmit a signal from the city. Once the equipment is tested and up and running, step two is that the Department of Technology will install additional Wi-Fi radios at locations in the residential area. We hope to announce the completion of this project by the November On Island Kaida Board meeting. Public Health Clinic. As reported last month, the Department of Public Health has identified appropriate space at the gymnasium to serve as DPH's nurse clinic office and waiting room. The rooms have already been painted and are in the process of being floored. There are some remaining issues, including ADA access. Outstanding issues are the clinic's hours of operation, the service provided, and the community engagement process to assure maximum use of the service by the island community. Staff will work with the Treasure Island Health Network on the community engagement plan. Boys and Girls Club, as you know, after many successful years of youth programming, the Boys and Girls Club have informed the island community that it has decided not to open the TI clubhouse at the start of the school year. That issue is the Navy remediation work in and around that location. The YMCA, which manages our gym, has expressed its desire to serve the island youth as part of their existing contract with us. Staff is in discussions with the Y regarding programming and details of feasibility. Also, I am in discussion with the Department of Children, Youth, and Family about aligning our funding with the grants of the community-based organizations for a more comprehensive city approach to youth services on the island. Under leasing activities, as reported by the leasing policy, all waivers and at-cost agreements I've granted included waivers for the U.S. Department of State, the Berkeley Police, and the neighbors. There was one new lease sublease signed since our last meeting that provides additional revenue to either $24,000. Also, we negotiated use permits with another planner for the upcoming music festival and with Zigna for a private event, both threes for the Great Lawn. It was a busy month for filming on the island. Photo shoots included a still shoot with Porsche, a Weather Channel documentary, an HP promotional video, a new HBO series called Looking, the Travel Channel series Monumental Mysteries, and a Japanese television production shoot. Under special events last month, the Treasure Island Flea Market featured the first ever produce park, several vendors offering fresh fruit and vegetables to the community. As you know, our staff has been committed over the years to seek food alternatives for the island community. We have been successful in opening two full-service restaurants, a grocery store, and a bodega, and there's also Mateo's Hot Dog Stand. The flea market promoters agreed to try an addition of fresh produce. We thank promoter Charles Ancinelli and hope that this produce park, too, is successful. Oracle World Appreciation Day was held September 25th. Happy to report that there were no noise complaints as reported by the Entertainment Commission. Omni Fest, a two-day yoga festival on the Great Lawn, was also held last weekend. Great weather brought hundreds out to the island. Upcoming events, the Treasure Island Music Festival the following weekend, and Grand Dynamics Opposite. Last year, after our high season, in an effort to create better resident awareness of our events, as well as mitigate and minimize resident issues created by our events, staff sat down with the residents at the monthly community meeting to hear their recommendations on how we can better manage the busy season. This year, we implemented several of those recommendations, including traffic control measures on the bridge, the use of the Department of Parking and Traffic to protect residential area from public parking during these events. We opened avenues quicker after events, and we kept open the store during the event. So this season, there have been fewer complaints as a result of these measures. Shout out to the 13 graduates of the leadership class. The class was conducted by SF Safe, organized by Tie-Dye, and funded by Tie-Duck. The 14-week training program that taught a cross-section of committed residents to the importance of community building and leadership development. Topics included community mapping, identifying the neighborhood resources and gaps, value-based goal setting, identifying different leadership styles, and learning about the leadership principles. There are several of the leadership group did present or provide comments early, but if the There's six of them here today. If you would stand for the board, please, and be identified. Becky Hogue, Sal Damonte, Tina Guerrera, Mark Connors, Catherine Lundgren, and Sabrina Rabel. Sabine Rabel, thank you very much for committing yourself to island leadership. A second shout out this evening for Catherine Lundgren, who has stepped down as the president of Good Neighbors to devote her time to the Treasure Island Health Network. Catherine led the group to a time of restoring the mission of the group. Thank you, Catherine, for your leadership. A third shout out then, and a welcoming to Sandra Conley, who will serve as the president of the new rebranded Good Neighbors group, now called the Treasure Island Community, or TIC. I look forward to working with her in the coming months. Next week we have our community meeting, which will be attended by much of the leadership group here, and we're excited about the new leadership commitment to the island. Madam Chair, that completes my report.
Well, thank you very much for your report, and as I mentioned earlier, that this commission takes it very seriously when residents step up to the plate and show their leadership. And one thing that we would like to do, and I'm going to talk to our director, is that we need to have a proclamation to mark the occasions so that this is something that would be really great coming from us, the commission, that you can present, you know, to your peers to let you know that we do appreciate every single effort that you're putting out there. And again, congratulations to you all. Thank you.
Oh, Madam Chair, I forgot one more thing. We will have the on-island meeting in November.
That is
fantastic. And at that time, that would be an appropriate time to recognize the group.
Thank you. Yeah, we definitely will celebrate it. Yes.
Next item, item number 3B, report by Treasure Island Director.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, members of the board. Three main areas of focus in my report today. First, the RAMS project that we're working on with the San Francisco Transportation Authority. Pre-proposal for the contract was held on island on September 17th, and we had very good turnout. There were 13 firms present for pre-proposal who indicated that they intended to pursue the project at the time. While some of them may end up partnering up with joint ventures, that still posed a very healthy competition on the project, so we're looking good there. The bids for that project are due on the 29th of this month, again with the target of the start of construction. Also, as was mentioned by Mark Connors, yesterday the Board of Supervisors approved four pieces of legislation related to TIDA. The first was the approval of the co-op agreement extension of the Navy. Also, the approval of the PUC MOU between TIDA and the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission that was heard last month at this board. And then two related measures that Mark alluded to, approving certificates of participation financing for improvements to the existing employees infrastructure. Working with the PUC right now to define the list of priorities for the use of that funding, and we'll come back in the first committee on that report and forward with the projects, hopefully next month. Finally, focus of my efforts right now is the completion of the economic development memorandum of agreement with the Navy. In the past month, we've spent 3 to 4 days of face-to-face negotiations with the Navy on the terms of the agreement, several exchanges of draft language. The good news in the process is that the draft team and the Navy face relocation team is unaffected by the current situation in D.C. They have in mind a funding project based on we've made substantial progress on the campaign and plan to bring the MOA to this board and in anticipation of that and in recognition of the progress that we've been making, PICD is preparing to advertise RFPs for consulting services to assist them in the preparation of the first major application.
question. What's the estimated timeline for the grant project?
The expectation is to award it in January and begin construction.
Any other questions? No? Thank you, sir.
Calling public comment under item 3. I have a speaker card for Becky Hill.
Good afternoon, Board. I'm Becky Hogue. First, I want to say thank you to Mary and Sherry for supporting the leadership class that we had with SF Safe. It brought together a number of different people from the island, so it was nice. It was a mixture of residents and program people, so which is something we've always wanted. As Miriam mentioned, we do have a new organization, TIC, Treasure Island Community, which I've been fortunate to. I'm going to be serving as vice president. We look forward to working with you, with the board, and with Bob and everyone. One of the things that came out of the class was the frustration of the leaders on the island of not knowing what's going on as far as redevelopment and everything that's going on. So we're hoping that that's one of the things with TIC, that we'll have some more communication so that we'll be able to keep the island, the residents, informed. Because we felt that if the leaders of the island were feeling frustrated, we could only imagine how the residents were feeling as to not knowing what's going on around them. But again, thank you for your support, your continued support, and we look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you so much. Any other questions?
Seeing no public comment, we will move to item number 4. Communications from and received by TIDAP. There were communications this month and the previous month from Caltrans, SFPNC, and Two Hartman Studios and the John Stewart Company. There were also several residential advisories, newsletters, and media publications. Any public comment on item number 4? None. Item number 5, ongoing business by Board of Directors.
Commissioners, any correspondence? None.
So public comment on item number 5. Next item number 6, consent agenda. All matters listed under constitute consent agenda are considered to be routine by the authority board and will be acted upon by a single vote of the authority board. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a member of the authority board so requests, in which event a matter shall be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. Item 6A, approving the minutes of the September 11, 2013 meeting.
Second.
Item number 7, informational presentation on a request for proposal for sublease, marketing, and property management of Treasure and Nueva Buena Islands market rate rental housing.
For the record, Peter Somerville, project office staff. As the board is aware, earlier this year, staff was directed to begin preparations for resolicitation of the existing agreement for the sublease, marketing, and management of the on-island market rate rental housing currently between the authority and John Stewart Company. In front of the board today, we'd like to make initial presentation on a couple of the key contents of this eventual request for proposals document, get some initial feedback from the board, answer any questions that may come up at this time as we sort of start this process. So I will present on these two sections in summary, and then make myself available for questions and take initial feedback from the board. The two elements in front of the board today that we're looking to have initial discussion on will be the scope of work and the submission requirements and evaluation criteria. It's important to note that we are talking just about the RFP document and not the actual agreement that would we'd be letting for this, but if there is discussion that we'd like to have about that agreement as well, we can have that after the presentation. In the staff summary, you'll find kind of expanded 6 or 7 points on what staff initially identified as a potential scope of work. I'll run through them quickly, and then if there's any questions at that time, I can take them, or after I go through the requirements and criteria, we can have any questions at once. The initial points presented, obviously, for subleasing and managing a market rate rental housing, would be operating, maintaining, and managing a market rate housing portfolio on a day-to-day basis in a clean, safe, attractive, and sanitary condition, managing the residential tenant application, screening, and sublease process for vacancies, ensuring monitoring, lease compliance, and enforcement, including dispute resolution, supervising and monitoring any and all of the contractors, subcontractors used to execute any of the obligations under the agreement, including monitoring of compliance with all applicable labor and prevailing wage requirements. Receiving and using reasonable efforts to resolve complaints and disputes, as I mentioned earlier. Establishing and executing a marketing plan for the marketing of the property and for availability of vacant units as they occur. And obviously financial considerations, including an annual budget, encompassing operational expenses, staffing, management fee structure, and structure of the rental revenue disbursement. The scope of work obviously would remain consistent with both the agreement in its current form, as has been amended over the years, as well as revisions to the agreement that were contemplated in prior discussions that were in front of the board regarding potential extension of the existing agreement. Those would include, obviously, prevailing wage considerations, mechanisms for increase and decrease in rental rates at unit turnover, per monthly management fees for unoccupied units, and updating various sections of Section 34 of the document to come current with San Francisco codes and requirements. I can stop at that point, or I can keep going through the requirements and the criteria.
Yes, please, I have a question. On the labor agreement, just so we reiterate that, because that has come before this commission, so any work, any scope of work at all, except for maintenance, will be subject to the prevailing wage?
As was discussed in the prior, we'd be looking at, the alterations, repairs, and improvements. Obviously, there is some of that gray area where it falls between maintenance and improvements. But by the time we get to that agreement, I imagine that would be even more clear than it was, if necessary, when we were discussing it in the proposed Sixth Amendment before.
The answer is yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll do that. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, Peter. So I mentioned this before a few meetings ago when this was first brought up about splitting the RFP into two RFPs, one for maintenance and one for collecting the rents and doing the rental units. So, I think that this, finding companies to bid on this RFP that do both may be hard, but if you split them and have one for maintenance and one for the property management, I think you have a bigger pool, more of a level playing field to make it fair for everybody. If at the end of the day, John Stewart's the only one that bids on both, fine, but I think at least we should break it up so we have two separate RFPs. I don't know what my colleagues think about that, but I just think that's a fair process.
I'd actually just like to hear your response to what
I would answer for Peter there. We had that comment, and at this time, after we present today and get some understanding of the direction of the board, we'll meet with the city family and decide the path forward on how we actually define a solicitation, what shape that would take. So again, this is just the preliminary discussion, direction, seeking, informational presentation to lead us to an eventual RFP.
Thank you. That's a good answer to what I was hoping for. And I'm just wanting to make sure that our board has a chance reviewing and approving the single RFP or two
Absolutely. Again, this is just informational presentation. We'll make several presentations along the way and actually hope to present with regards to capital improvement work that the property needs in order to inform and package the eventual RFP with a complete understanding of what the property suffers from today, how it exists through the life cycle that we're proposing. So there's lots of elements to this that will be brought up to you in terms well before the hits the
streets. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Well, that's an interesting idea. My question is, who would be in charge? I mean, somebody's got to be the landlord and tell you, arrange for things, coordinate things, decide what to do. And so who would it be?
Would it be in the meantime?
No, who would it be? If you have JSCO handling the administration and some other contractor handling the physical, who is making sure it all works? Who's in charge? Who's the boss?
The contractor that we hire would be the boss.
I mean, no. I mean, there's going to be work orders. There's going to have to be a whole system. So when you split it up, if JSCO can't direct the other contractors what to do and what to do and so on, who would?
Well, it would be the office of TIDA.
So then you would have TIDA getting direct engagement and problem management rather than subordinate.
Okay, so.
I mean, that's a question. That's a question. Yeah.
So it's great that
that's a question.
We have
I'm interested in that.
Well, rephrase your question because I'm not understanding.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a landlord. I run stuff. I understand very well, you know, who does what and how it's divided and responsibilities and coordination. And when you split it up into two different parties, and if neither one of them is in charge of the other, you know, and who is responsible for what, does it have to be coordination between the two? Because the residents don't want to hear an answer that, well, we don't do that. So who do they go to get things taken care of?
Well, my question back to you would be, there's other entities and other places in the city that just have maintenance contracts, and who oversees those?
The landlord does. The landlord does. And yeah, I mean, you could either could hire somebody to run it, a new position to run to do that job. But we've never done that before. I know exactly what the job is. I've been doing it for 35 years. But, so, yeah,
and they will hire you.
We could do it. I mean, if that's the answer, we should take it in-house. I hear you.
So at this point here, I'm going to have
obviously there's discussions about different models of property management, and so the staff will explore those different models in cooperation with the city, and we'll bring proposals to you to attend to those different models.
Okay, so I have DeCarlo and Commissioner Sue.
Yeah, we could probably get into a later discussion about this and all the different models that exist, because like Commissioner Evelyn, we're also landlords in this housing, and you know, we have property management contracts and we have maintenance contracts, and sometimes they're with the property management company, sometimes they're separate. So maybe my experience as a landlord is different than Commissioner Evelyn, as you know, but similar models. So the real question is, how are we going to ask for proposals to do different kinds of work? I'll tell you the thing that makes me a little bit nervous is when we talk about the gray area of communities, because I've dealt with these issues before as well, and you know, we have to really have some definition of what the areas of work are and make our own definitions in some cases about what commitments and what subjects. And I think that's the process that's going on now. And I know a number of us are interested in that and just want to, you know, follow that very closely and, you know, appreciate your reports and updates on that. So I think that you can make recommendations to us about how we can look at those two types of work separately.
Thank you, Commissioner Sumar.
Well, I guess I look forward to a lively debate when we do have the proposal, and I do and I would like to see the model. But in my experience working with property managers, and I'm not a landlord like yourselves are, but I do feel that perhaps simplicity could be better than complications, especially since Treasure Island is a large area. The geography is complicated, and the management of maintenance services and all that could be, you know, what we don't want is we don't want to have the residents suffer as a result of many different heads making changes or making decisions. So I do look forward to that, but I tell you right now, I would not, I guess I should keep a nice open mind, but I would probably be more in favor of a more simplistic model so that things don't fall through the cracks. So.
Thank you, and I want to jump in here, and I think this kind of discussion is great, it's lively, because then we can look at whatever options are out there. At the end of the day, though, I think once we get all the information, in addition to simplicity, we're going to have to actually look how much we're talking about the best solution that is going to make sure that we're able to do the work effectively and we can manage that effectively and also at a cost that is not going to overrun anything throughout the city. I'm not a landlord, but I have been also privileged to be part of many teams that are looking at issues. How do we support maintenance, you know, for the city, for the residents? There are emergencies. You know, we're talking about old infrastructure that is breaking every day. And as long as we have residents on that island, I think we have an obligation to make sure that we have whatever actions we take, that we can respond effectively and timely into getting things done as simply as we can. So this kind of dialogue is great. But at the end of the day, I think this commission will have to bring it back. We're all going to have to vote on it and show the direction. And at that point, I think people that are listening can understand that on this commission, yes, we have all kinds of ideas, and we're trying to get the best ideas that commissioners are putting forward so that, you know, but at the end of the day, we're going to make that decision, and we're going to live by it, and we're going to move on. So Commissioner Oberlin, and I have Commissioner Mazzola.
Well, I'm just trying to be very practical. The big advantage of the arrangement of the last 10 years or so, 15 years? Long time. The master lease, one of them, well, there were two. One is there was a single entity in charge of all activities, working with the residents, dealing with issues of the properties and administrative issues. It was unified. And that's certainly efficient. And that's also the most accessible arrangement for the tenants. And as we have these discussions, I certainly hope that we, you know, bear in mind the importance of the what it means for the residents that live there in their everyday lives. This isn't just an abstract discussion for us. But the other big advantage was that we were largely, as TIDA, insulated from liability of what property management did. So if there were problems with how John Stewart Company handled its landlord's responsibility, they might have to go to small claims court. They may be in some issue, regulatory or legal, due to some alleged mismanagement or violation of harassment or discrimination, et cetera, et cetera. These things come up. Now, if we step into the role directly, directing what is going to happen in those properties, we lose that insulation from liability. I am sure we could hire staff to do the job. I don't doubt that. Okay, I know that's possible. But it brings with it exposure to all the small things that can happen with residential rental real estate. And I think, you know, it's really important as we evaluate our options that we bear in mind these issues of coordination, of liability and risk, and then, of course, the everyday lives of our residents. These are really important criteria.
Thank you, Commissioner Mazzola.
Yeah. So I'm not so much concerned with whether or not this is going to be a simple thing or a complicated thing to split these. I'm more concerned with a fair a process as possible to widen the pool of players out there. And, I mean, the majority of you guys didn't even want to have an RFP in the first place. I'm glad we're even talking about it now and we're going to do it. I think we need to do it. I think it's our job and our obligation to do it while we're on this board, to have a fair process, and this is the fairest way to do it. So I think, I'll save the rest of my comments for when we do talk about it again, but I'm trying to get the most fair process so the people out in San Francisco have a better chance of bidding on these things, and I'll leave it at that.
So what is the timeline on this? Do we know when we should be expecting?
So Peter has next steps to discuss.
So based on some of the discussion today, like Director Saez mentioned, we're obviously going to have to go back and consult with the city attorney's office and some of the relevant city departments from a contracting end. Our intent today, and I apologize if this wasn't clear at the beginning of the presentation, was to start to kind of have a discussion and get an understanding of the what of the scope. We're obviously just putting our feet into this, or putting our toes in, and the sort of how is obviously, we've seen here today, even some more considerations. With that said, we are going to, based on some of the feedback received today, start those discussions with other departments. I assume that at a future meeting, in another month or two, perhaps at the December meeting, we'll be able to come back with a little bit more detail on the framework. Some of the questions that are out there about the RFP document itself, once we sort of flesh that out a little bit more, I imagine that will give us a little bit more vision on what the agreement may need to look like.
Thank you. And also wanted to interject that the city does have a standard contracting process. So regardless of what agency you're in, it's in there. And so it's tried and true. So you're going to be utilizing that.
Correct, and that's the same process that we followed recently with the gym proposal.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for your report. Any other public questions? No. Okay.
Next item number 8, resolution retroactively approving and authorizing the Director of Island Operations to waive the permit fee for use permit number P725 with the California Dragon Boat Association, Inc., a California nonprofit corporation, for the production of the 18th annual Kaiser Permanente San Francisco International Dragon Boat Festival on Treasure Island.
And before Jack begins, I just want to say that, as you know, every month I disclose waivers and at-cost fees. This is above my threshold, and that's why we're bringing it before the board.
Good afternoon, directors. For the record, Jack Mathenson, Treasure Island Development Authority. 2013 marked the 8th year that the California Dragon Boat Association held the San Francisco International Dragon Boat Festival on Treasure Island. This year, Navy remediation work in Clipper Cove significantly impacted the event. Initially, project staff and the Dragon Boat Association were notified of the Navy work in March of 2013. In June of 2013, we were provided a map of the proposed work, and you can see the map up here. What happened was that subsequent to us receiving the map, the Navy changed the scope and the timing of the work without prior notification to either the authority or the Dragon Boat Association, and therein lies the problem. According to the map, the turbidity curtain, which is meant to control the disbursement of silt into the cove during this remediation, was to extend 150 feet into the cove. That long sort of purple line that runs the length of the cove there along the shoreline. In reality, that curtain extended nearly 180 feet into the cove, so 30 feet more. In addition to that, there were anchor buoys that extended an additional 50 feet into the cove. Those anchor buoys were never disclosed to the authority or the association either, nor were they depicted on that map. And then finally, a second monitoring buoy, and you can see on that map the blue sort of diamond on the right-hand side is a monitoring buoy. Well, there is a second buoy in the cove, which was in the middle of the planned Dragon Boat race course. So it caused significant issues. In order to mitigate these issues, the Dragon Boat Festival ultimately paid Navy subcontractor Dixon Marine Services $9,900 to temporarily remove the floating anchor buoys, specifically the floats, as well as that monitoring buoy. Ultimately, the Dragon Boat Festival was a successful event. Over 120 teams from all over the states and Canada participated. We had nearly 50,000 people spectating. But these unforeseen obstacles caused the Dragon Boat Association to put a lot of time, cost, and attention in their last minute planning for what is an already a complicated event. So the Dragon Boat Association signed its already standard normal use permit, permit fee 725. Terms and conditions are the proposed permit for 27 parcels, including the proposed grade lawn, the chapel parking lot, the building 180 parking lot, the major parking lot, and the pavement
matter pertaining to closed session.